Well, absolutely. I'm on generators here in the Midwest, by the way, getting pummeled by more storms. Hank Wesselman, our special guest tonight, author of The Bowl of Light, and we will be back in a moment. We will take your phone calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Hank Wesselman. We're going to take your phone calls for the hour. Hank, the title of the book, of course, The Bowl of Light. Tell me the significance of this and our lifestyle and how this can help us.
Well, the bowl of light is really a metaphor for that immortal spark of our higher self essence that enters into us at the beginning of life and takes up residence within our heart. This is why the heart is the center of where true wisdom really lies. And part of, I think, the goal for the next cycle of ages is going to be to transition from a head to a heart type of consciousness in virtually everything that we do. This is, I think, what Makua meant when he said, love all that you see with humility. You can't do that through the head. You have to do it through the heart. And as long as you turn towards your heart and what your heart dictates, you can't go wrong. You can't go too far wrong after that. This is also why he said that the second goal of the plan, to pick up where we left off, is for all of our elders, both indigenous and Western, to bring their personal groups of family members and students and spirited aspirants and colleagues into connection with each other. He said that, first of all, this needs to be done objectively in real reality, subjectively, like we're doing over the telephone, intuitively, which is really spiritually, and he felt that eventually it's going to take place between all human beings telepathically, that this is an ability that we're all in the process of developing in an evolutionary sense. That's really quite exciting when you think about it.
Sure is. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Rick in Fillmore, California. Rick, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George.
Hi there.
Hi, Hank.
Hey, hi, Rick. What's up?
Yeah. I think you're a very, very highly enlightened person. And I think you are very enlightening. There's a lot of wisdom in your talk, and I find that very positive. And you know, I was reading a thing about an old Buddhist text. It's very important that said in this one line, a very wisdomatic line. It said, "Good by the inch invites evil by the yard," and that kind of struck me as a very powerful line because it made me. I think it really is true that good by the inch invites evil by the yard, and I don't know why. Is it because of the electromagnetic sphere or the energy or what's your take on that?
Well, I think it's partially because once we decide to step up, in other words, once we decide to step up and out of our former life ways and our former behavioral patterns, and once we decide to become members of this spiritual hierarchy, our responsibilities include discovering what it is that we're meant to bridge into this world. And this is also in addition to the gifts that we're here to offer, in addition to our life roles, and in addition to our own personal growth as an embodied immortal, in addition to the lessons that we're here to learn. This is really about each of us clarifying and refining the vision. For the vision itself permeates all of us, and it evolves and changes as we evolve and change ourselves. Nothing is set in stone, not scripture, not sutras, not ceremony. And I think this is you know, part of the wisdom that this great man Makua had to share with us, which is so nurturing at the soul level.
Hank, what does this tell you about life itself when people like Hale, shamans, possess this incredible spirituality, this ability to touch their, you know, a human soul with the way they think, their thought process. They're very special people.
Well, you know, there's a great difference between an indigenous society and a Western society like our own. Indigenous people tend to live in small, homogeneous societies in which the shamans of the community are well-known. And they serve as medicine people, as healers, as wisdom keepers, and so forth and so on. Everybody knows who they are. In our society, shamans tend to keep a fairly low profile. I think this is, you know, because of the memories that we all have of what happened when the church decided to eliminate the competition, which reached its peak between the years 1500 and 1650 during the Great Witch Hunts, and millions of people were killed because they were in direct competition with. But, you know, what's happening now is that everything is in the process of shifting as we come to the end of the cycle of ages. And it's really now about the elders stepping up and coming forward and connecting with each other and bringing all of their associates and colleagues into connection with each other as well. It's about creating connection rather than furthering separation. And, you know, this brings up, you know, just a little bit more about the plan, if you'd like to hear about it, because there are essentially three stages that Makua saw as
yeah, go ahead.
Being.
Sure.
The first stage is political in nature, and the objective of the work at this level is to develop international links throughout the world through the vehicle of consciousness itself. Now, this is a fairly tall order, but the foundation for these links has to be based in compassion, in aloha. This was absolutely central in his teaching. The consciousness will create the foundation and then embody a spirit of international interdependence and interrelationship based on that aloha. And so what he was saying is that isolation, separateness, exclusiveness, and the cultivation of nationalism just simply has to go. And in the same manner, all of our nationalist egoisms, colored by our sense of superiority and furthered by class and tribal hatreds, to take it to a tribal level as well, you know, as well as racial and religious antagonisms, these simply have to go as well, because they constitute a formidable barrier to the true development of our humanity and our interconnection in spirit. And this is what he saw as the core of the political nature of the plan. He said that the spiritual awareness of these facts has to be acknowledged and absorbed by each one of us so that we can begin to then move up and into this true spiritual hierarchy. And this is above and beyond our participation in or involvement with any organized religion or sect, any political party or socioeconomic stratum, or even any cultural identity. Now, this is a fairly tall order when you think about it.
It's a huge order. Let's go to Honolulu. Makona, you're on with Hank Wesselman. Hi, Makona.
Hi, it's Makona. Hank has some very beautiful things to say. And one of the things, though, he said that his book, The Bowl of Light, is the first one published with true Hawaiian philosophy. And he said he was surrounded by books, and I think he missed a few. And in fact, I find it rather insulting to all the Hawaiian authors who have written books. The story of the Bowl of Light was first published by a Hawaiian, an author named Polly J. Lee, in 1986 in her book, Tales from the Night Rainbow, which is a classic. She
yes,
also wrote the book Ho'opono.
I'm very much aware of that book.
And then there's Nanaviri, there's Mary Kavena Pakui, there's Tachika Anoi, there's Moki Kupihea. So for you to say that yours is the first one.
No, I don't think
he
said
Hawaiian
that.
Philosophy.
No,
he
no,
did.
No. He's talking about the shaman, not himself.
This is the first one to be published from Makua's perspective. And as such, it represents quite a unique book. I've widely read in the literature by Kupihea and The Tales of the Night Rainbow and Leilani Melville Lewis.
Well, Hank, I got to tell you, though, let me stop you there. If you were to tell me every Hawaiian book written about things like this, I would have said, Hank, we're doing the interview about you and your work, not all those other people. So,
great.
You know, we'll just we'll let it move on. I mean, for some reason, I don't see where she thinks you aren't paying homage to anybody else, but that's the way it is.
Well, you know, in talking about that, we could mention the second level of the plan, which could be called religious in nature. Religious in nature. Makua was quite adamant that the time has come to establish a comprehensive and universal understanding about the nature of reality and the nature of ourselves, our physical selves, our mental, emotional selves, and our spiritual selves. And this is a perspective that fosters the growth of our spiritual consciousness. And this is part of what this book has tried to do. It was his perspective that our organized religions have, on the whole, been a serious impediment to the growth of this awareness in humanity, at least for the last 2,000 years. Yet, you know, everything changes. Religious differences are the hardest to bridge or heal, but we live in a time in which everything is changing, and so progress is being made. And in this sense, what we're talking about is a foundation for the next cycle of ages. And this is what Makua was sketching out in his mind with this ancestral plan. And nobody has put this forward in quite this way before. It's really quite a unique perspective.
And by the way, in the back of your book, you have recommended reading, and you must have about 25 to 40 books in there.
Well, it's just the curse of being a scholar, George. I'm always reading.
I know, but I just want her to know that you do recommend a lot of other books. Let's go to Jeff in Culver City, California. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling.
George, and to your guest, Hank. Yes, I'd like to know if you were familiar with the Sai Baba of India and his recent passing, and if so, what do you think his reincarnation would be like since he was revered as a godlike figure over there? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes, he'd been sick for some time, and he has just passed on, Hank.
Yeah, you know, I never met him. But of course, you know, I, like everyone else, has heard all the stories about the miracles and as well as the flaws in his character. I mean, this is all very well known. But he was a holy man. And, you know, his passing is very sad, because what's happening is a lot of the elders are dropping off the screen. You know, Makua's gone. Auntie Poi Poi from Maui is gone. A lot of the elders are going. And it means that the younger generation now has to really step up and take the helm in a way, drawing on the knowledge of the past to create the future that we want to pass on to our descendants. But Sai Baba was a holy man. And I'm sorry I never met him, but, you know, I never went to India, so that's possibly why.
Hank, every once in a while, on a Friday especially, we'll play some music from Brother Iz, who was one of the most incredible singers I've heard, and I've listened to him now for a number of years. I don't know, did you ever have an opportunity to meet him in Hawaii at all?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
You missed a good one there. He's passed on, too. Livingston, Tennessee. Jerry, you're with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Morning.
I would just like to ask Hank first. So with what he's kind of teaching here, he would think that we would not have to follow the teachings of Christ anymore to become whole or to be enlightened. Is that what he's saying?
It's really about connecting, establishing connection rather than separation. He perceived that there is a new kind of religion which is coming into being. And this involves a new perspective on the nature of what we could call the all that is. See, our archaic religious views from the last 2,000 years are in serious need of an upgrade. You know, the old traditional religious perspectives of who we are and what we are vis-a-vis the cosmos, they're really no longer serving us like they used to. In the sphere of religious thought and practice, we simply need to grow. And this is about a new spiritual complex which is coming into being. You know, the time has come to create connection rather than separation. And the mystical experience is part of it, because at the core of this new spiritual complex which is coming into being is the awareness that each one of us can have the direct transcendent experience of the mystic, of the sacred world that defines the shaman, that this is waiting for us out there on the trail. And it's been my experience with Western people that given a minimum of lead-in and a minimum of training, most of them can go off on their visionary adventures, listening to the drum played at a theta brainwave pattern, and then come back 20 minutes later with accounts which would pass muster at any Aboriginal campfire. So it's about the old and the new, and the synthesis of an entirely new perspective on who we are, what the cosmos is all about, and what we're doing here. This is what's coming into being in our time. And I believe it'll be the foundation for the next form of spiritual practice, which will be part of the foundation for the new cycle of ages.
Well, let's go to Mike in Phoenix, first-time caller. Get him in before the break. Go ahead, Michael.
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Wesselman.
Hello.
First, I'd like to thank you for addressing such crucial bottom-line life and death issues. I just appreciate what you're doing for humanity. And I hear so many parallels between shamanism and Buddhism in what you're saying. And I'd like to know what you feel the most fundamental differences are and why shamanism appeals more to you.
Well, if I could put it this way, shamanism is the ancient archaic ancestor of all of our spiritual practices. Most of our mainstream religions have come into being during the last 2,000 years. Shamanism is probably 40 to 50,000, maybe even 100,000 years old. And we know this because of the rock art and the cave art, which was preserved all over the world, depicting the visionary experiences of shamans. So what's happening in our time is something that was predicted by the old prophet Black Elk. You remember the book Black Elk Speaks?
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a classic in Native American literature. Before he died, back in, I think it was 1949, 1950, he predicted that with the ending of this cycle of ages, the primordial spirituality would reemerge and reestablish itself, and it would be on this foundation that the next cycle of ages would be built. That's recorded, by the way, in the book The Sacred Pipe, The Seven Rituals of the Ogallala Sioux, by Joseph Eppes Brown, who wrote the second book about Black Elk's visions.
Where do you get the book, The Bowl of Light, Hank?
You can get it anywhere. You know, I hate to say it, but I tend to get virtually everything I buy from Amazon now. And Amazon offers books at a tremendous discount. And so there's Amazon, there's Barnes & Noble, there are various other online ways to buy. But I also patronize my local bookstore.
Well, I was going to say, there's something about going into a bookstore and browsing around and sitting down and just enjoying it, isn't it?
You got it. You know, and you know, we've just lost our borders here in Kona.
Yeah, they've closed a lot of them.
So our bookstore is now a wonderful little bookstore down in the Keoho Shopping Center called Kona Stories. And they've got a couple boxes of my books, including the one I did with Sandy Ingerman a year ago. And they're just selling like hotcakes.
Super. Well, Hank, you stay with us. When we come back, I want to talk about the three souls again that you were talking about, because I find that fascinating. And we'll also take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, well, you know that's easy. It's george@coasttocoastam.com. I'll tell you a little bit about next night's guest, by the way, Alexandra Robbins, and what we're going to be talking about on Coast to Coast AM as well. Here we are in the Midwest, dodging the storms, staying on the air, thanks to our engineering department with these incredible little generators. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Sure is, here in the Midwest, and of course, you know, we're weathering the storms here. I've got four generators here in the cave, one that controls my main computer and my light. Has finally gone. Goodbye, it's gone. So I am operating with a flashlight in my hand. I kid you not. I've got my backup computer working. Its generator seems to be okay. And then, of course, the two broadcast generators are functioning still okay. So we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your final phone calls with Hank Wesselman. And also, on our next Coast to Coast show, hopefully I'll be originating from the cave. If not, I'll rush down to KTRS in St. Louis to do it. Alexandra Robbins joins us with her new work called The Geeks Shall Inherit the Earth. It's about popularity and why outsiders thrive after high school. We're going to take you back a little bit to when you were in school. It's an amazing story. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Hank Wesselman with us. We're talking about his work, The Bowl of Light, about shamanism in Hawaii. It's an incredible story. We're going to take your final phone calls as well. Hank, while you were doing all of this, was there anything there that you found to be very unusual about the man, the shaman? Was he somewhat mystical, or do you think he was just an average person?
Well, he was a very powerful chief, for starters. And when he and I were together, when we were in connection with each other, You know, my wife, who's quite clairvoyant, could observe the fact that a field would come into being between us, between our two physical bodies. And when that field became active, it was kind of like these were moments of grace in which his oversoul and my oversoul, his ancestors and my ancestors, it all got very crowded because they would all come in and sort of not exactly clamor for attention, but those ancestral impulses could be felt very, very strongly. And so this man was really quite unique. He carried a body of wisdom which was probably unequaled in the islands. And when he passed, he took a great deal of this wisdom with him, which is a great loss to all of us who knew him. He was a very unique man. I never met anyone in my life quite as powerful and as loving as this man. This was a man who embodied aloha.
Do you miss him?
Terribly. I mean, gosh, when he passed, I had to go and teach a week's worth of classes in California, and I don't know how I got through the week. I mean, I really don't. I was, you know, just kind of breaking down. I mourned for him in a way that I'd never even mourned for my own mother and father when they passed. He was my great Hawaiian friend, and what came into being between the two of us, it felt very old. It's as though, you know, all of us were together before in past lives. And this is something that other clairvoyants had perceived in seeing the two of us together.
All right, let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Tom's with us on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to comment, Mr. Norrie, on your guest's opinion, suggestion about moving our thinking from our minds to our hearts. I think that's a very wise suggestion. However, I think you also get a wonderful synergistic effect when you combine the two. And if I could parlay that into an example,
sure,
a real life example, in fact, that would help one of your earlier callers. I empathized with the woman who had her computer stolen with all her content. I've experienced something similar, and most of the time when something like that happens, it's not so much the hardware, it's the digital content that you really miss. And getting back to tying that into the mind and the heart issue, I'm sure she's bitter and angry as anyone would be, but if I could give her this advice, anytime you're dealing with important digital content, redundancy is so important to back that information up. So that information almost certainly would have been lost eventually if she didn't back it up. So it's a lesson to be learned. And if she looks at it that way, using her heart and her mind, she can ensure that in the future, something like that, if it does happen, she would have all of her digital content, and that might soften her heart a little bit about the bitter feelings that she has towards the thief.
I'd like that, and I'd like to get your reaction to that, Hank.
Well, I'd like to zero in on something that you've just brought up, and that is the relationship between the head and the heart. There's a profound split in the
And speak up a little bit, Hank, just a
yeah,
little
there's
bit.
There's a profound split in the Western world between the mental and the emotional levels of the self. This has been pointed out by many, many people, including the philosopher Ken Wilber. There has to be a relationship between them because the mental soul, this is something George asked about before the break, the mental soul is the aspect of ourself that thinks, analyzes, integrates, assigns meaning to, makes decisions. In other words, it's our inner chief executive, our inner CEO that steers us successfully or unsuccessfully through life based on the convictions or belief systems that it holds to be true. The mental soul is also the source of our intentionality and our volition, as well as our creativity. And it was Makua's impression that we're not here to drop the mental. We're here to develop that soul, because the egoic soul is where we find connection with our creativity, and by developing those capacities as creators within ourselves, we develop godlike abilities, which are not held by any other creature on this planet. But the emotional level of the self, this is the soul that is the source of our emotions and feelings. It's the source of our memory banks. It runs the entire physical body, including its repair and restoration. It's the sender and receiver of all psychic as well as all shamanic experiences. In other words, it's the perceiver. It's the perceiver of the outer world in which we act as well as the inner world in which we dream. Its prime directive is to grow, to increase and become more. It's not programmed to deny, repress, or contain. And like a good soldier or a good personal computer, since you brought it up, the role of the body soul, the physical soul, is to obey orders. So there has to be a relationship between the mental and the physical aspects of the self. This is absolutely essential. Then just to finish this off, the higher self, the bowl of light that comes into us with our first breath and leaves with the last, this connects us to our oversoul, who is our teacher in spirit. And that teacher in spirit communicates with us most effectively through the medium of what we call intuition, through dreams, through visions, through hunches, through slips of the tongue. This is how the spiritual aspect of the self exerts its influence on us during life, which reveals that really the spiritual level of the self, the higher self or the over-self, is the teacher. It's the spirit teacher.
Hank,
the relationship between the three is essential. Yes, George?
Did the shaman ever lose his temper, lose his cool?
I never saw him lose his discipline in all the years I knew him. He had made certain decisions, I think, about the negative polarity, and he just refused to go there anymore.
Okay, let's go to Beaumont, Texas. That's where we're going. First-time caller Christina is up on Coast to Coast Land. Hi, Christina.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah, I'm a little nervous. I apologize.
Oh, you're fine.
Well, I have a question. How do we figure out who we actually, like, what, like, our path is actually going towards, like, who we actually are? Because I listen to your show, and people listen to your show and tell me that I have a lot of the things in common with the stuff that you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know where I'm supposed to be going. I'm just kind of going.
All right, so where does she go, Hank? That's right. What path does she take?
Well, you know, as we become members of this spiritual hierarchy, as we make that decision to step up, our responsibilities include discovering what it is that we're meant to bridge into this world. And this is in addition to all the gifts that we're here to offer, in addition to our life roles and the life lessons we're working on. This is about each of us refining and clarifying the vision, for the vision permeates all of us, and it evolves and changes as we evolve and change. So welcome to the club. It's a very nice club. There are no dues, there are no committee meetings, just reverence.
And you can't get tossed out. West of the Rockies, Kathy is in Portland, Oregon, and you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. What I want to know, kind of like your last caller, when you first got your visions before you went and spoke to the shaman and went on your journey, I'm a little nervous here. I had an experience that I would see a whole entire thing from beginning to end. I saw people and faces on the floor, like you were talking about the different levels going up and down.
Yeah.
I saw a, staircase. I also saw colors of lights and angels. I also saw different cultures. And I watched a photograph, and, you know, my family is Japanese, and you're talking, you know, cultural. And I watched a whole entire culture come through a photograph. or not a photograph, a painting, where it changed from male to female, glasses, non-glasses, and, you know, this happened a couple of years ago, and that everybody's awakening.
Yes.
And doctors think you're nuts.
And well, you're not nuts, but how do you convince people that you're going through this metamorphosis, Hank?
Well, you know, I might just put in here that these are not unusual experiences. In fact, the majority of people in our country and in our world have had experiences like this. There was a very well-known Gallup poll that came out in the late 1980s that revealed that 43% of the general population has had experiences like yours, experiences like mine. This reveals that the pool of water is very deep. And, you know, in my workshops, I've, you know, discovered that at least, I would say 85% of the people that come into my workshops can vision to some extent. And I would say that about half of us are real naturals at it, are really good at it. And this has given rise to this understanding that I have that there is some sort of genetic program on our inner hard drive, which means our DNA. And when that program is double-clicked with the right mouse, it might be fatigue, it might be contemplation, it might be the drum. Hey, it could be hallucinogens if people are inclined in that direction. But hallucinogens are not the only way. You know, there's a real technology of transcendence that was developed by the shamans of the indigenous people across time. And this technology is about helping us to expand our conscious awareness so that we can perceive in that expanded way that you've just described.
All right. Thank you, Hank. Mike is in Wisconsin. One or two more callers. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Okay.
Been listening to you since, Hank, and how you doing? Been listening to you since you had Miriam Delicato on there, and she's going to the Great Gathering at the Hopis out in Arizona.
That's right.
And I wrote to Miriam. I haven't heard back. I was going to go to Arizona to see. And what I wanted to ask Hank is, and the shamans, I'm familiar, and I've talked to you before, George. I'm a former Marine, Vietnam disabled vet. And,
that's right.
And I'm living on, I'm part Osage Indian. My great-great-great-great-grandfather's pure Osage. And right now I'm living on Indian mounds, on burial, I don't know if they're burial grounds, but I think what it is happening, it's coming. The new life is coming. The love, the peace. And Hank knows that. If his wife is clairvoyant, she would know in my heart what I am saying. And we're in some deep, deep trouble. And we need to love each other more. We need to share that peace. We need to come together because it is coming, the Trinity. It is coming. I know. I feel it in my heart. I'm 60 years old almost. And all my seeings and things I've done in my life, I know in my heart truly that it is coming, and we better be able to love each other more.
Well, let me ask you this, Hank. Are we ready for it when it happens?
Well, that's always the question. Are we ready to step up? You know, have we learned the lesson yet? And I think it happens to us individually. I don't know if you can say it happens at the level of an entire culture, although some cultures like the Hopi, their culture is permeated by spirituality. It influences every moment of their waking life and their dreaming life. And that's something that we in the Western world seem to have lost because of our preoccupation with the glitter of our new gadgets and our new toys. You know, technology is at the center of our culture, whereas spirituality would be at the center of the culture of people like the Hopis. But I think, George, that a new synthesis has to come into being. And this is a kind of conjoining of the tangible and intangible levels of reality that brings science and spirituality together. This is what I see as being the crux of my work as a scientist. You know, this synthesis is going to be brought into being by people working in the fields of education and science and theology and psychology and anthropology and philosophy, to name just a few. And it will enable an extension of our senses, allowing us to access these hidden worlds that lie behind the veil of ignorance and matter. Oh, I like the way I said that.
I like the way you said it, too. About a minute and a half to go, Hank. Once again, we're talking with Hank Wesselman, his book, The Bowl of Light. What's next for you, Hank?
What's next for me? Well, you know, I'm traveling to California in about a week and a half to do a couple of workshops, three in a row, actually. And here at home, I've got a lot of interviews with this new book coming out all over the place. This one, of course, is The Star and the Crown. You know, this is just such a fabulous show, George. You do such a great job with it. And your reach, of course, is formidable. I don't know of how many of your listeners are aware of the fact that on an average night, you have somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 million listeners. Is that true still?
People pop in, they pop out at any specific time. I don't even keep track of how many millions we have anymore, Hank.
Well, the work that you're doing in the world is extraordinarily important because you're creating the crossroads in which this ancestral grand plan is being drawn forward. I mean, you're doing your work, I'm doing my work. My wife is doing her work. You know, we're all in this together. And Makoa was fond of observing, you know, hey, we're all in the canoe together, and if we keep paddling and we keep bailing and we keep paddling in the same direction, we'll reach the island. And I think this is what it's all about.
And we'll reach it all together. Hank, we've got some rough, bumpy roads ahead, as you well know, but I think we're going to get there. And as I've always said, we are all in it together. Hank Wesselman, The Bowl of Light. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.